From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. It's been 4 years since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the virus is continuing to affect people in ways scientists are still trying to understand. That's because the virus continues to evolve at an incredibly rapid rate. So, what does all of this mean? Joining us today is Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System. And remember, if you have a question for Dr. Pate, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, let's just begin with how quickly the COVID-19 virus really continues to evolve.
Yeah, for people that don't live their lives consumed with studying viruses and epidemics and so forth, which is most everybody, let me just explain a couple things that are just really, really unusual and unprecedented about what we're dealing with this virus. The first thing is it's a very fast rate of mutations, changes to its genetic makeup. And that is in large part made possible by the fact that the world has really allowed this virus to just keep on transmitting as it likes, because every time it causes a new infection, it's a new opportunity for it to experiment in the body and make changes, some of which actually help it become more transmissible, evade immune defenses, et cetera. So that's one thing. The second thing is we have never had a respiratory virus like this. And when I say respiratory, I don't mean that the disease is confined to the respiratory system, because it is not. What I'm talking about is an airborne virus that transmits through the air. We've never had a virus come like this and then persist for season after season, including, as you pointed out in the intro, we are like less than 2 months away from our first case in Idaho 4 years ago. We've had influenza pandemics. They kind of come, they go. This one has stayed, and that's unprecedented. And we are just giving this virus tremendous opportunities to keep evolving, which it has. And the third thing that I'll say is, to my knowledge, we've never had a situation where we've had a virus that does recombination. We've talked about this before, where the virus can swap genetic material with another related virus and form something that is, we can see pieces of both of those viruses. We call those recombinants. And when we talk about recombinants, that was when we started using the X abbreviation at the beginning of the names, like XBB1.5. That was a recombinant. We never have been in a situation where recombinants actually became the dominant circulating virus, and for so long. So there's so much about this that is new. And I think people assume they know a whole lot more about this virus than most scientists will tell you we're comfortable making those kind of conclusions.
So Dr. Pate, can we talk also a little bit about what some scientists are calling like a silent organ damage? And I know you've talked about this with long COVID and the issues that we continue to see with that. And then how really on top of that, numbers aren't reported for a variety of reasons, right? When it comes to COVID or even long COVID.
You're absolutely correct, Gemma. And, you know, when they talk about this silent damage, what they're talking about is people may get infected, they may have symptoms, but they generally improve and get better and think, okay, I'm past it. But that is not always the case. We are finding more and more evidence that in not insignificant numbers of people, the virus doesn't get cleared from their body and it persists. And one of the most recent concerns we've had, and I'm saying just concern, I'm not saying proof or evidence, but we have seen now new evidence that the virus can infect the brain. And the latest evidence was it can affect what we call dopaminergic neurons. These are extremely important, and these are the things that cause a problem when you get Parkinson's disease. So we don't know what's going to happen, but one of the things that the scientists have alerted us doctors is be on the lookout that in the upcoming years, we might see Parkinson's disease increase because of all these infections. We don't know. And what I'm saying is nobody knows, but we are seeing these signals that we can see long-term heart problems, long-term endocrine problems like diabetes, long-term neurologic problems. That's not proof. The problem is it can sometimes take 10, 15 or more years before we can really prove the association. And by that time, if you're just taking a cavalier approach about this and getting infected over and over again, if this does become an association, there's not much to be done at that point.
Mm. So let's get to some listener questions, Dr. Pate, because they've been coming in and I really want to make sure that we answer them. So Laura wrote in and she said her husband, who is 66, attended an indoor music event. And then 3 days later, he woke up sick. He had a mild sore throat, dry cough, no nasal congestion or a fever. And then he saw on social media that a lot of people got COVID at that event that he attended. So she said that he tested negative twice with home kits. 5 days later, he was diagnosed with walking pneumonia. He's recovered except for extreme fatigue after skiing or walking. So her question is this: how do they know that he did not have COVID and he just tested negative on a home test? And is there any reliable way, especially if his fatigue continues, Dr. Pate, to see if he has recently had COVID?
Yeah, the answer to both questions is no. We don't have a good way at this point to determine whether it was COVID. It's very likely it was. The exposure that he had, an indoor event with a large number of people, of which people are reporting COVID illness afterwards, the high likelihood that he was exposed mm-hmm. to that virus. And the timing is right, because I think she said that her husband got sick about 3 days later. That's correct. Pretty good timing. Now, my only hesitation is, if it was very recently, it might also have, it could have been the influenza. I can't tell which, but especially with the report of the so-called walking pneumonia, both influenza and COVID can cause that problem. And so I think that the most important thing is, and one more point. It also depends on when the timing of those rapid tests were done. One of the things that we've talked about, Gemma, is now that more people have been vaccinated, more people have been infected, you don't turn positive as quickly as when the beginning of the pandemic. So the peak time to turning positive is actually day 4 or 5. And that's why we suggest if you get symptoms today, I would test tomorrow and then wait 48 hours, test again. And if you want to, for extra surety, wait 2 more days and then test the final time. Because sometimes people aren't turning positive until far out there. So if his symptoms continue, he still needs to see the doctor. Might be a good idea to see one of the doctors that is specializing in long COVID.
And then Yule wrote in, Dr. Pate, and he wants to know if there is a place that the general public can see the COVID wastewater metrics for Boise. Yule says, I've seen data on the city of Boise.org website, and I appreciate the details shown there, but it's very out of date.
Yes, unfortunately, that's one of the big problems with wastewater. I mean, wastewater is great, but even when they're promptly reporting, they're usually a week old. Unfortunately, the city of Houston, which has been awesome, giving us a lot of information, the latest report right now is 3 weeks old, which probably means it's a month old. because it just takes that long to do the sequencing and all. They've made assurances that they're going to get it up to, you know, up more up to date. On the other hand, I'm concerned because the legislature appears to be cutting funding for a lot of this. So I don't know. But if you specifically want Boise data, I don't think there's a better place than the city of Houston Water. It's just not going to be as up to date as I would like. The other places I look to try to get a complete picture, you can go to the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare site, and they have wastewater from a number of parts of the state. And so you can look at that, but it's not going to be specific to the Boise area, but you can get Ada County on there. The other thing is I look at the CDC wastewater. However, it doesn't include the Ada County site, so it's not as useful. And then one of my favorite sites is the BioBot site, because you can get not only COVID, but flu and RSV as well.
So Dr. Pate, Sherry's writing in, and she says, does Dr. Pate's advice for traveling by air still hold now that we have a more contagious variant? He has said in the past that we should wear our masks in the airport terminal and when boarding the plane, but is it okay to remove the mask when the plane is at altitude? With this new variant, is this still a relatively safe practice? She says, I'm an older person, completely vaccinated, who must continue to travel.
Well, great question. So a couple of things. The highest risk points for getting COVID with a flight are at the gate where you're waiting, on the plane before you've taken off, because a lot of times they don't have the engines fully running, and so you're not getting all the ventilation and filtration, and again, after you've landed. Those are the highest risk. Now, it does not mean there's no risk while you're in flight. The ventilation and filtration is pretty good. It's not 100%. And we have well-documented transmission on flights. What I personally do is I keep my N95 mask on for the entire flight, except when I eat or drink. And what I do then is I put on my overhead vent, turn it up full blast, have it directed straight down to your feet, and then just take the mask off long enough to do your eating or drinking, and then get it right back on is what I do.
And Dr. Pate, I only have about a minute or so left with you, and I quickly want to once again talk about what we're seeing with young kids when it comes to COVID, and because their systems are not fully developed, right? So how concerned do we need to be when it comes to kids? And I ask this question because I've been seeing so many kids get infected over and over and over again.
Well, you're exactly right. And the answer is we don't know how concerned to be. We see what we call signals. That's not proof. That's not evidence. But it's things that kind of make us concerned that there might be a problem. And for example, the younger the child that gets infected, the more concern I personally would have. We have looked now at infants, and their immune systems are not fully developed, and their brains are not fully developed. And what we are seeing in some early studies is just some concerning signs. It doesn't mean that it for sure is going to be a long-term problem, but I don't know any way for any pediatrician or anybody else to tell you that there won't be problems down the road. Now, kids have to be kids. What I don't think we should be go overboard, but I would sure like to see schools put in the kind of air system handling that we know will help cut down on transmission and infections. And I think we should take caution, especially with infants and the very younger children, about having them around high-risk situations where you're going to be indoors with a lot of people And because we just don't know, and we likely aren't going to know for a while, but I see enough things that are concerning to me, especially we've demonstrated this viral persistence in some kids, and we don't know what that means for the future.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.